Names are important. Each time that my wife Joy and I were expecting a child, we named that child while they were still in utero. And we knew that they were going to be stuck with their last name, Wink, and that might pose some playground challenges over the years. And so we really wanted to give some thought and intention to their first names. And so when our first was born, Natalie, in late November, Natalie means a birth of Christ, Christmas. So she was our early Christmas present. And then when we discovered that number two was going to be a son, my wife Joy had grown up with two rather spirited brothers, and she was terrified of the prospects of raising a son. And so we went with Joshua, which means God saves. We thought that he could use that. And then when number three was on the way, we named her Olivia for Olive Branch, which is a gesture of peace, and she was born at a time when we really needed peace in our lives. So names are important. Names are meaningful. Throughout the Bible, the names that are given have significant meaning. And so we have three of the most fun names to say in the entire Bible in today's story. So just say them with me. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Oh, man, that's fun. And for any of you who were fans of the old VeggieTales animations, they did one called Rackshack and Benny. Rackshack and Benny. But these were not their originally given names. So anytime there's a name change in the Bible, there's something meaningful going on. These were the names that were given them by the palace master of King Nebuchadnezzar in Babylon. And so it's significant to note what their names had been and what they meant and what they now were and meant. So Shadrach was originally named Hananiah, which meant God is gracious. But now Shadrach means command of Aku, who is the Babylonian moon god. And Meshach, his name is the closest to his original, Mishael, or who is like God. And here instead it means who is as Aku is, again, the moon god. And Abednego had been Azariah, meaning God keeps him. But Abednego now means servant of Nabu, who was another Babylonian deity. So you think about the disorientation that these guys have experienced. They've been taken out of the land, not just their home, but the land that God had promised them as a sign of his presence and blessing. And they're far away. They don't have the language. And now their names have stripped away their identity. And we find, though, in this story, though, that while the Nebuchadnezzar could take God out of their names, he couldn't take God out of them. So this story, of course, is about more than names. It's about who is the ultimate authority in our lives. How do we manage the tension between that ultimate authority and competing claims? And where is God when we suffer? Especially when we suffer for being faithful. So this is a very, very vividly written story. Nebuchadnezzar is portrayed almost as a buffoon, isn't he? I mean, he's vain, he's paranoid, he's reactive. And but the thing is, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego respect him. They've served him along with Daniel in his palace, and they've served him better than some of his native-born leaders have. They've shown more wisdom, and they're very devoted. But respect and reverence are not the same thing. And so Nebuchadnezzar, in his vanity, thinks that I'm the king. I can create another deity in this pantheon that we're already worshiping. What's one more? And so he builds a 90-foot-tall statue and creates this elaborate ritual by which everyone will hear all the cacophony and bow down to this 90-foot statue. No problem, right, guys? But the Israelites do not worship a pantheon. They worship one God, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And that God had given them very clear commands about other gods. Like, no. First commandment stuff. And then to read on a little farther about prohibition of graven images. 90 feet tall counts as a graven image, right? That one's not on the line. And so it's a non-starter for them. And we don't know whether they're openly defiant. My guess is, given that they're serving in the king's court, they probably just find something else to do during the time that everyone else is bowing down. And did you notice that they said people of every land and every language bow down when they hear the sound? So the Babylonians, when they took over territory, the way that they controlled it was they would take those who might rebel and exile them. So it wasn't just the Israelites who'd been exiled into Babylon. And apparently none of the others had a problem bowing down to this 90-foot-tall statue. But the Israelites did, or at least these three, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And as you might expect, when people are elevated to positions of power in foreign lands, that raises a little spark of jealousy among the natives. And so they make sure that Nebuchadnezzar is well aware of the defiance of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And in places like this where, you know, they don't have free elections, so it's ruled by intimidation, and he just can't tolerate anyone repudiating his authority. So because he's favorably disposed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he invites them in to have a little conversation. And you can hear in this, maybe these guys didn't understand, or maybe they didn't hear. So let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Guys, the next time you hear all of these instruments playing, just bow down and worship this 90-foot-tall statue, which is pretty hard to miss. You guys have a problem with that? And they say, well, yes, of course, King. And in fact, we do. And they give this marvelous confession of faith in verses 16 through 18. Basically, what they're saying is, whatever God does with us, we like our chances of God delivering us far more than we like our chances of you delivering us. This is not well received. So we're told that Nebuchadnezzar's so angry that his face becomes distorted. Have you ever been on the other side of a rage-induced, distorted face? The fire maybe is preferable. And so they stoke it to, you know, the highest level possible, and it's so hot that those who throw in Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are themselves consumed by the flames. And yet, what happens? They're unharmed. They're unharmed. And the God who they expected to deliver them sent an angel who was visible to Nebuchadnezzar as well. And Nebuchadnezzar turns pretty quickly. He realizes, wow. What I had thought was just disobedience was actually trust in who he calls the Most High God. So he doesn't get rid of his whole pantheon, but he says, okay, your God is the Most High God. And in fact, the only one who's able to deliver in this way. And so, you know, Nebuchadnezzar turns from prohibiting this to encouraging it, and promotes Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So, it wasn't their faith, though, that turned Nebuchadnezzar. Did you notice that? What was faith to them was rebellion to Nebuchadnezzar. It was God's faithfulness in delivering them that turned Nebuchadnezzar. See, we think sometimes that our expressions of faith are the things that are most compelling to other people. They might generate interest, but it's God who delivers. And our faith, our deliverance is through God's faithfulness, not our own, certainly not solely our own. And so this question of, you know, is there anything that you would put above God as the highest authority? That's really the driving question there, and it's the driving question that Jesus faces in that short passage we heard in his interaction with Pilate. So this is just before he's put to death. And if you want to read that whole section there in John chapter 18, you know, Pilate he's the governor of Rome, or he's the Roman governor appointed to Judea. And the authority there that they're expecting Jesus to bow down to is not a 90-foot statue, but the Roman Empire, as is manifest in Pilate. But this conversation between the two of them, Pilate does not seem like the guy in charge. Jesus does. And Jesus says, "My kingdom, my rule transcends this world. You may have what you think is all the power right now, but my kingdom transcends this world. And if you want to be about the truth, you will listen to me." Them's fighting words, aren't they? And it's not a furnace heated to 7 times the normal intensity. Instead, it's a cross, which is a very efficient method of execution. But over the next 3 days, Jesus' words bear out. They bear out. He's not spared from death. God does one better. He raises him bodily from death 3 days later and to this day. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Jesus all suffer not because they're failing, not because they're getting things wrong. They suffer because they're faithful. They suffer precisely because they're faithful. And sometimes we think in our minds that suffering is punishment for unfaith. But here's some stories which indicate others, and they're not the only ones in the Bible that are that way. Sometimes when we're feeling the heat, it's precisely because we are being faithful. What is it that would pull us away? My guess is it's not a 90-foot tall statue. Probably the next time you're asked to bow down to a 90-foot tall statue will be the first time. But there are other competing authorities in our lives that are less visible, but no less powerful and no less real. Where might we bow down and worship even more than God? Work? Accomplishments? Stuff? Ideology? Even family? It's easy to say no to a 90-foot tall statue. It's not so easy to say no to the good things, even the God-given things in our lives, that would claim ultimate authority. And here's the thing, though. God does not need our validation. What we need is to be devoted to the one who actually can and does deliver. Those other good things ultimately cannot deliver. If our devotion is to anything else above God, even good things, then deliverance remains a question to be answered. So as we enter into this season of Advent, and I know for kids, Advent is getting ready for Christmas. But seasonally for the church, it's getting ready for Jesus to come again. And so one of the ways that we prepare for Jesus to come again is to make room for him and put him first in our lives. So just on your own, this one we're not texting, we're not popping it up on the screen, just on your own, what is ultimately the authority in your life? What is ultimately the authority in your life? And if it's anything other than Jesus, know that there are blessings of God that yet await you. And know that if you're feeling the heat is not a sign of God's absence. Feeling the heat might be the sign of God's closest presence to you. And trust that we worship and serve a God who saves from fire, who raises from death, and who calls each of us by name. Amen.